welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Mag. Mark, how are you doing today?
Well, it's Friday, so it's good.
Good, good, good. And you must have some peach blossoms or something in the trees by now.
The apple and cherry and all those blossoms are blossoming, and people's allergies are kicking in even a little early. It's been kind of a weird, wet, fairly warm winter down here.
Yeah, it's been a weird winter, I think, almost everywhere. We're going to talk this week about eustachian tube dysfunction. A little bit of background here. The middle ear, as we know, is an air-filled chamber. It's vented by the eustachian tube. During normal physiologic function, air in the middle ear is absorbed normally, very slowly, by mucosal membranes. Those membranes are continuously replaced. This sort of movement of air happens normally. It's exacerbated or hastened when we swallow or yawn. That opens the eustachian tube for a second or so and allows air to flow in multiple different directions. When the eustachian tube doesn't function adequately, this pressure differential builds up between the eustachian tube and the outside world. It can cause all kinds of problems and can distort the tympanic membrane. Middle ear dysfunction or disease can be due to failure or inadequacy of the eustachian tube to function normally. The nasopharyngeal and tympanic ends are usually wider than the middle of the tube, and this causes, again, some important dysfunction. So the normal function of the eustachian tube has three major roles. One, it equalizes pressure across the tympanic membrane. Second of all, it protects the middle ear from infection and also reflux from the nasopharyngeal contents. And lastly, it is involved in the clearance of middle ear secretions. This week's poem that Mark chose from a complicated journal name here. It's the Archives of Otolaryngology and Head and Neck Surgery. It asks a practical clinical question, and that is, in children or adults with symptoms of eustachian tube dysfunction, is intranasal triamcinolone effective at decreasing symptoms? So we've got a population of people with eustachian tube dysfunction. In the past, we've used steroids. Is there evidence that this actually helps, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've done, and you know, it's one of those. Well, you know, we've trained our patients to want a prescription when they walk out, and this is one that isn't an antibiotic, and you know, these are folks, you know, it's going to be 2 or 3 months, and maybe some of them will need a, you know, tympanostomy tube eventually if they've really got a gooey mess in there. And so, you know, we try the nasal steroids. And so this was they had 91 adults and kids over the age 6, so it wasn't the little kids, it was 6 and older, mostly adults. And they came into an ENT clinic with at least 1 week of symptoms of ET dysfunction. So it's a referral population, so that might have been a little worse than average population, or they might have already tried some of these things with their primary care doc. So they had fullness or pressure, pain, plugged ear sensation, popping, decreased hearing. They did tympanometry, and they had negative middle ear pressure by tympanometry. They excluded anyone who had an acute infection or a cholesteatoma or perforation. And they randomized them to get either triamcinolone aqueous nasal spray, 110 micrograms for adults and 55 for kids once a day, or placebo. And that's a reasonable dose. It's kind of in the middle of the dosing range for that medication. And after 6 weeks, they didn't see any difference between the groups in symptoms or changes in tympanometry or overall benefit or overall symptoms. And, you know, actually some of the symptoms, the overall outcome was actually worse a little bit in the treatment group than in the placebo group, about 35% responders versus 18%. So that wasn't what they expected. It was a little underpowered. They wanted about 150 patients. They only got 90. So it's possible they missed the benefit if there was one. But, you know, that seems unlikely since the benefit was actually heading in favor of the placebo group in this case. So intranasal steroids, they didn't find any improvement in patients with that sort of serous otitis eustachian tube dysfunction picture with the sort of negative pressure in their middle ear. And I remember, Mike, in our course in South Dakota, we were talking about sinusitis, and there were several studies of nasal steroids and sinusitis, which is the same principle. We've got fluid trapped up there. If we throw steroids at it, maybe it'll reduce the swelling, open it up, let the sinus drain, or let the middle ear drain. And those showed a modest benefit in the meta-analysis. And if you looked at the one best study in sinusitis, that also didn't find any benefit of nasal steroids. So it's, you know, you're not going to, it might be a temporizing measure, but don't be too optimistic that it's going to do anything.
It is something that we all do in the absence of anything else. I mean, I guess we also use decongestants. Anyways, we'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thanks, take care.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem. We'll be right back.